Welcome to the Do Good to Lead Well podcast. If you're passionate about mastering self-leadership, then you're in the right place. I have always been curious about and fascinated by the pursuit of leadership excellence. This is why I pursued my PhD in psychology with a specialization in business, and I've continued to dedicate my career to understanding the science and practice of positive leadership. My name is Craig Dowden. I'm a best-selling author, award-winning keynote speaker, executive coach, and member of the Forbes Coaches Council. Each week, I'll bring you world-class content on the science and practice of positive leadership. Through my conversations with best-selling authors, TED speakers, and top CEOs, you'll be able to leverage their insights and experience so you can maximize your potential and be the leader the world needs you to be. Hello, everyone, and thank you for your ongoing support of the Do Good to Lead Well podcast. We pride ourselves on providing the best quality conversations as well as audio experience for listeners. Unfortunately, we sometimes can't control the audio quality. Things come up. Technology is awesome when it works and can create some challenges when it doesn't. So this episode, the audio quality will be a little lower than what you're normally used to. Yet, in speaking with the team, we decided because of how great this conversation was, packed with so many insightful comments, we really wanted to put it out into the world. So we hope you enjoy another episode of Do Good to Lead Well. Thank you so much.
I want to take a moment to just express once again my sincere gratitude to each and every one of you. Love your feedback, love your ideas, and because of your ongoing support and encouragement, the Do Good to Lead Well podcast ranked in the top 1% of all podcasts in the world, according to Listen Notes. And again, this could not remotely happen without your support. So a huge, huge expression of thanks. And the other reason that this podcast has generated such wonderful levels of engagement is because of the amazing guests that I've been so privileged to be able to speak with. And today is no different. So I'm thrilled to welcome Dr. Danica Guzny, the CEO of the Canadian Museum of Nature, to the Do Good to Lead Well podcast. And so Danica began her five-year appointment as president and CEO of the Canadian Museum of Nature on September 1st of last year, 2022. Mm-hmm. She's passionate about science literacy. So it's something we have so much in common. This is definitely them. I love data. I love science and building public trust in science, as well as improving equity, diversity, inclusion, and accessibility in STEM. She obtained her Bachelor of Science First Class Honors from St. Francis Xavier University, her PhD in the Department of Microbiology and Immunology and the Biotechnology Laboratory at the University of British Columbia, for which she was awarded the Governor General's Gold Medal, among other awards. Dr. Guzny also worked as a research scientist at two Vancouver-based biotechnology companies. She joined the Federal Public Service in 2006, where she served in increasingly senior executive roles. She held several director general positions at CIHR in the research, knowledge, translation, and ethics portfolio before taking on the role of associate vice president, tri-agency institutional program secretariat at the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council. Most recently, she served as the Vice President, Research Grants and Scholarships at the National Natural Sciences and Engineering Research Council of Canada. And that just kind of starts the conversation. So welcome to the program, Danica. So great to have you here.
Thank you, Craig. It's wonderful to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Well, and I want to start with kind of recent events. I guess, you know, breaking news, we'll borrow from CNN. There's this fabulous program partnership that was just announced. I just love it, whereby now doctors can prescribe visits to the museum. Like, this was so cool. Please Google this. And I'd love for you to take some time to talk about the genesis of the idea, the elements of the program, why this is so important. I just think this is such an amazing accomplishment and really awesome.
Thanks, Craig. Yes, certainly. I was really excited with this partnership too. So this is a partnership that the Canadian Museum of Nature has with the BC Parks Foundation, and it's an initiative called Parks RX. So it's P-A-R-X, meaning nature prescriptions. And this initiative started by, but in the Canadian context, BC Parks has been leading this. It allows physicians to prescribe nature to their patients. And as we know, nature is so important for our health, both mental health, improving mood, improving energy and productivity, cardiovascular, inflammation, you name it, nature is definitely going to help. And so we've also learned there's a wealth of data and information now that's available that visits to the museum and looking at art is also great in terms of boosting the mood, reducing anxiety and depression. So combining the two, we're a museum of nature, coming and taking a look at our beautiful exhibits does put you very much in a sense of awe and ease. And so now we are able to allow doctors to prescribe visits to our museum. And so far we've had hundreds of physicians sign up to this program and we've had patients already in the tour at the museum.
Well, and that's amazing. And what I love about it, I mean, there's so much, right? I love the evidence-based aspect of it in terms of there's so much phenomenal research into the link. And there's such an emphasis these days in particular on self-care and how can we ensure that we protect our mental health and are really engaged. And what's that been like for you as that announcement has been made public and people are coming in? It just must be a really personally meaningful, fulfilling opportunity and experience for you.
Absolutely. When I took this role on with the Museum of Nature, it is a bit of a stretch from my background, but I am a health researcher by training, a microbiologist. And so for me, I've always sort of seen the ability to weave nature and health together. And it's so wonderful to see the science and the data really backing up all these anecdotal experiences that we know that, you know, or at least in my experience, nature always made me feel better. Now we've got the science to back it up. So coming into this role and being able to initiate this kind of initiative has been just tremendous for me and for obviously the museum and the physicians who are prescribing. And more importantly, it's going to have a huge impact on people's health and well-being.
There's so much within the program and in particular, you know, prescribing that as part of for doctors, right? Like this is good for our health and it's so important. So just, I think it's such an inspiring idea and so timely. And again, congratulations. And it goes without saying for those of you who are return guests and someone has already, Anne has jumped in, which is great. The first audience question. You have the opportunity to ask Danica any question you'd like. So please step in, share your questions, your ideas, your feedback. And so Anne was listening intently to your bio and said, I love, Danica, that one of your focus is to improve equity, diversity, inclusion, and accessibility in STEM. Can you share a little bit more about what we need to do here and some things that you think are really important?
Thank you so much for the question. This is an area that I've been focused on for the past decade. What we've seen in science, tech, engineering, and mathematics, we are seeing improvements in terms of gender, racialized minorities, people with differing abilities, and indigenous communities being part of the various STEM disciplines. I would say that we have a lot more work to do, though. So great progress, but a lot more work. Things that I've been really focused on, first of all, I'm a big believer in the old adage, what gets measured gets done. So knowing, you know, what do the research demographics look like? What do our faculty numbers look like? What does the student body look like? And being able to track over time, you know, the increase, hopefully, in women and racialized minorities and indigenous communities and people with disabilities in the various disciplines. I'm a big believer in also capturing that data in a disaggregated way. So not just lumping all groups together, but being able to get a little bit more fine-tuned about, you know, are there certain communities that might not have as much access or as much success in or retention in or promotion within a particular discipline? So the data, measuring the data and knowing what gets done. So that one thing that we've been moving the needle a lot on over the course of the past decade is capturing that data. And this has been a collective effort across StatsCan, the universities, the various federal bodies that support research funding, and so on. And so this data capture allows us to really see any changes that are happening and any more changes that need to happen. So that's one thing that's been good is that we've been tracking the data. We've also been implementing a lot of policy and program design. So having intentional policy design allows you to really ensure that there aren't barriers, whether they're intentional and usually they're unintentional barriers to accessing scholarships, funding, promotion, tenure, these sorts of things. So again, working to collective effort across the academic and across all the research sector to really try to ensure that we're moving the needle on that. So those are a couple of examples of how things have moved, and I could talk on forever about this. So, you know, if you want more precision, fire them my way.
Well, that's awesome. And I got several comments already. Great insight. Thank you for sharing. And I really appreciate the point, because people who follow this podcast, I love data. I love data science. I love numbers. And I really appreciate your point, Danica, about the disaggregation, because sometimes we can be so focused on the aggregation, which certainly can give us some insights, and yet we can miss that more nuanced, disaggregated approach, and then drawing lessons from that exactly as you highlight. So I think data can be powerful, and we also want to recognize, okay, how we're applying it in what context, and what might we be missing. So I think that's so important. One of the questions that I have as well, there's so much emphasis. I love to talk to people about leadership, the podcast, Do Good to Lead Well. So, and not surprisingly, we are living in what's called a VUCA world, you know, so volatile, uncertain, complex, ambiguous. Things are moving so fast. So when you look at the land of leadership, what do you feel are essential leadership qualities that individuals need to possess in order to be successful both now and in the future?
Great question, Craig. And as you know, as you mentioned, we're living in a VUCA world. The world is very different than it was about, you know, 3 years ago, let alone a decade ago. And I think, first of all, that points to leaders needing to be agile and adaptable in our approach. We need to be able to pivot on a dime, and the more flexibility and nimbleness that we can weave into our day-to-day mindsets and approaches, the better off we're going to be in terms of adjusting to whatever new situation comes our way. I also think kind of tied into that is the notion of lifelong learning. So, you know, if you're too rigid in your approach, or at least, this is, you know, that this is how I've always done it, and I'm always going to continue this way, you know, eventually that's going to stop working. And these days, that's likely to happen pretty quickly. So if you're committed to continuous learning, and you're going to have access to different tools and philosophies, and that's going to help you out in different circumstances. And I think also associated with the notion of a constantly changing world is the need to be empathetic and compassionate. Now more than ever, just, you know, don't be a jerk. To be blunt, the world we're living in is changing so quickly. We're leading a diverse workforce with different concerns, different needs, and you need to listen and you need to understand where your folks are coming from in order to create and maintain that healthy, productive workplace that people really want to work in. And I talk a lot about health. You heard me talk about health with nature, especially mental health, and having a leader that understands and cares and genuinely supports their team and builds resilience in a positive workplace, I think that goes a long way. Likewise, I think leaders who prioritize sustainability and social responsibility contribute to a better future for their organizations and society as a whole. I talked about EDI and accessibility, but I don't think you can be an effective leader these days without inclusion and belonging in your workplace, really considering that. As I mentioned earlier, having diverse backgrounds, experiences, identities make any product or initiative or program that you have more effective and impactful. And there's a lot of data on that. I know you like your data. There's a lot of data to back that up too. So I guess, you know, bringing that all together for me, I refer to my three H's, and I'm not claiming any intellectual property over this. I'm sure it exists somewhere, but humanity, humility, and humor. Those are the three things that I always come back to as my leadership characteristics. And what I love about it is that it comes from the same word humus, which means effectively soil, right? So to me, those are like my literal grounding elements. And I think that's really important leadership characteristics.
I love that. And if it isn't a 3H model out there, there you go. I'm going to grab this from the podcast. Put in copyright Craig Dowden, right? That's
go look it up. Go look it up. Take it.
Like, oh, there you go. Yeah, that's right. Who needs AI? I'll just pull it right now from the, well, and in all seriousness, I really appreciate the point. And I've got a follow-up question here from Gregory, who's on the lifelong learning side. Really appreciate that you use that phraseology. And then what are some of the things that you've seen that really maximize your learning potential? So love that question.
I love that question too. And thank you. So, you know, for me personally, lifelong learning you know, well, there's the formal learning and that's part of it, but that's not really what I'm talking about here. It's getting out into the workforce. I think you should always be investing in your own development. And I'm not meaning financial investing, it's just with the time and, you know, taking the time to read books, listen to podcasts, like your wonderful podcast and your wonderful book, to put a plug in there. And, you know, chatting with folks who've got experience in other areas, get a mentor, like learn from them, learn from a coach, and do things sometimes. Like, I love learning things that are completely out of my expertise and background and actually have nothing to do with work per se, but I can always find lessons to bring back into the workplace. You know, and one example that I'll use just for that is before the pandemic, my son was taking karate and I started to take it with him to try to motivate him. And it turns out that he didn't really like it, but I loved it. So I kept going through and I kept learning, you know, and eventually I got my black belt last year. It cost me my knee, but I got my black belt. But what I learned, there was a lot of excellent learning and philosophy that I could actually weave into how I do my work. So just learning from all different aspects and just never stop finding. So for me, you know, being a researcher, I'm a curiosity driven person. I'm always just trying to learn about this, that, and the other thing. And even if it seems a complete tangent, I still find ways to make it useful for my work.
Well, and again, great comments in the chat box. Thanking you for the answer and including with Gregory. Fabulous. Thank you. And I really appreciate that. So many great nuggets in there, Danica. And in particular, the value of wandering, I guess, in terms of like, and those things that are unrelated sometimes can just unlock entirely different insights because, mm-hmm. or there can be interesting parallels between something that's in a different sphere altogether. And I've experienced that myself in my personal and professional life where you go outside of where you normally hang out and you go, oh, that's so interesting. I wonder how it apply here. Or, wow, look, there's similarities, even if it's in an mm-hmm. entirely different space. I think that's so, so great. I've got another question from Gina, and really appreciate that you talked about mentors. So any advice around how to identify a good mentor and any advice around how to approach those prospective mentors in conversation?
That's a great question as well. And I certainly would not have gotten anywhere in my life without advice and support from great mentors along the way. So first, you know, I do want to say that a mentor isn't someone who's necessarily senior to you in a work kind of supervisory. In fact, I would encourage you not to have your direct supervisor or manager as your mentor. You can certainly learn a lot from them, but I like to get to talk to people who are outside a little bit. And I've had mentors that are in junior positions to me and senior positions to me and in my peer group. And I find all three very helpful, to be honest. And I look for folks that I like their approach to thinking and problem solving and how they engage with people. I'm a very people-oriented person, so I like watching how people engage with others. And, you know, if I think that I can learn from them, I do reach out. And it is a little bit of an awkward, you know, for me, you know, maybe it's not awkward for everybody, but the first few times where I've reached out and asked, it was, you know, a little bit trepidatious, I have to say. I've gotten much better at it now. And I've also had mentors who sort of reached out to me and asked, you're new in this position. I've done this sort of thing before. I've worked in this environment before. I'm here to offer support. So they sort of opened the door for me, and that makes it a little bit easier to go in and ask. But, you know, I generally am quite an honest and frank person. And I say, you know, I really liked working with you. I really like how you handled that meeting. And I'd love to just have more conversations with you. Can I take you out for a coffee and pick your brain? And generally that works quite well.
That's awesome. No, I love that. And again, one of the pieces within your perspective, Danica, it's the reverse mentoring. A lot of times people think, okay, well, it's more senior or more experienced or more. And what I really value and think it's so important, and I'm so glad that you highlighted that, is that like mentorship can come from anywhere and it's about the person that we're interacting with. And I really love, so again, for everybody to highlight that, it's so how do they think? How do they interact? What are their perspectives on things? Because that's going to be so, that level of fit is so helpful because it really expands our horizons and really deepens that relationship. So I think that's so great. You touched on empathy earlier, and I admit my own bias around empathy and its role in effective leadership. And so I'd love for you to unpack that a little bit more because sometimes people can get a little nervous with being empathetic. Like, is that going to make me soft as a leader? I'd love for you to share a little bit about why empathy, you feel that's so important. And if you can give us some examples or practices of things that you feel are affiliated with empathetic leaders. And I know this is a big question. Mm-hmm. I find this is such an important area of focus, and there's so much to be learned and gained. So I'd love to hear your perspective.
Thank you, Craig. So for me, empathy is absolutely crucial in the workplace and in leadership in particular. I think it allows you as a leader to establish a culture of well-being. And we talked about this earlier too. People feel cared for and supported, and you get to know them as people, and you can then see the signs of burnout or stress or offer support and accommodation where needed. And it just goes a long way to building trust with your team. These are folks that you spend, you know, a lot of time in the run of the day. And then if the team feels like you understand and you care about their feelings, I think that goes a long way to like really like developing that core relationship. And without that, you're not going to have the impact you're looking for as a leader either, right? So, you know, you get that bond when you show empathy and compassion. I think it also helps with communication too, because, you know, if you can put yourself into your employee's shoes, you're better able to communicate and address the individual's perspectives and needs. So, you know, how you go about doing that and giving you some examples, you know, I kind of go back to my three H's, the humanity, the humility, and the humor, right? You know, be human, put yourself in their shoes, try to understand and listen. Like, we just spend so much time talking, and we really need to spend more time listening. Sometimes that means listening without jumping straight into problem solving mode too, which is a habit that I certainly do have. Offering flexibility when it's needed, if someone's going through a tough time. And if people are going through good times, recognize and acknowledge and show your appreciation, your gratitude, because that is also a very empathetic and compassionate. Doesn't have to be a big thing, but a short thank you note, or, you know, saying thank you when you see them goes a long way.
Well, and thank you. And that's so great. And for me, making that link between empathy and trust, I think that's so important, because then if people feel, in my experience, that you're genuinely interested in their reality, what's important to them, as you correctly point out, then there's that deepening of that trust. Even if we have different perspectives on things, the fact that someone is innately interested in who I am, what I'm about, you're so right. And in an era where trust can be challenging to secure, I think you've just highlighted such an important example. Another question I'm curious about, there's a lot of discussion around authentic leadership and how important it is to be authentic. And so I'm curious, if we can, you know, who are you as an authentic leader? Like, who is your authentic self? And what role do you see that having in terms of its benefits in an organization?
Oh, there's a lot in there too. So who I am, sometimes that's a good question. So Craig, you know, I grew up in Newfoundland with a Newfoundlander dad and a Quebecois mom. And those are two cultures that are all heart and family and humor and community. And so that's what my authentic self remains rooted in. For me, it's to be my best self at work and at home, anchoring myself in those roots. I know I've listened to this podcast a lot. There's a lot of talk about aligning your actions with your values. So staying true to my values in the job and in my personal life is my authentic self. So transparency, fairness, equity, diversity, inclusion, these are things that I value very much. And if the job or my personal life don't bring those, then that becomes hard to be authentic. I think, you know, from a work perspective, I need to wholeheartedly buy into the mission and the mandate of where I'm working. Again, much like the values, if those don't align, then it's harder to be authentic. And I've been grateful throughout my career that I've always had great alignment there. So I've been able to be my genuine self in all instances. You know, other things that are important to me, I've been really fortunate, you know, like as I mentioned throughout my career, to be able to speak honestly and freely around prioritizing my health and well-being of my family. And I do that with the teams that I lead as well, to make sure that they are prioritizing that with their own health and their family's health, because I care so much about the importance of health. You know, without that, you can't do much. So that's another part of myself. I'm a super transparent person. I would say in some situations, probably more than I should be. And this is something that I'm learning, and we can talk about oversharing in terms of authenticity at some point. And then as a leader, in terms of my authentic self in a leadership role, I am very people-oriented. I care a lot about my team and their well-being. I definitely bring a service mindset to my work. So working in the public service has been a great fit for me. And we've already talked about this, but being a scientist by training, I'm certainly data-driven. So I know you can't get access to all the numbers all the time, but if I can get them, I will want them.
That's awesome. Well, and couldn't have asked for a better setup to the next question. I've got so much positive feedback about your answer and people saying thank you for sharing. Karen was wondering, I really appreciate your background as a data scientist, researcher, and has lots of access to data and sometimes doesn't feel like it's landing, like having the impact that Karen would like. So any tips, tools around, you know, how can you have more impact or maybe maximum impact with data?
That's a great question, Karen. I have struggled with the same thing, and I'm starting to learn that there's a bit of a story around the data to make it compelling. So it depends, you know, sort of recognizing your audience. For me, if you gave me a spreadsheet with all of the numbers, I would be very happy with that, and I would find that compelling. But there are others who don't find that compelling. And so it's finding a way to make the data relevant to them. And maybe it's as simple, or simple, never this simple, as finding the right story to kind of capture their imagination and inspire them with some of the data backing it up. And in my work in the public service, I frequently have to talk to non-scientific partners. I talk to the politicians in this country at various levels. And so, you know, it's finding the right way to get those numbers across. For me, my fault is talking too much and boring them to death with 3 hours worth of data and slides. So it's finding that right balance and knowing the audience.
Well, and Karen, thank you. Awesome. The power of story. And I love that you made that point right out of the gate in terms of that. And then how do you get that data to speak to the audience and myself too? I'll raise my hand and join the support group in terms of saying yes, like, because get so enamored with the numbers and what they represent. It's like, look, it's data. And then it can be a bit myopic in terms of how your message lands with people. So great question and great answer and great insights. Continue to go. We've got questions flowing in. So another one from Eric, who really appreciated your observation about values and then was curious, how were you able to identify your values? Because it's an area of uncertainty. So any advice you'd have, would love to hear your journey to how you identify and lead with your values.
That's a great question and not one that came easily for me. I have to admit it's only in recent years that they've sort of, you know, come into focus with a bit more clarity. What really helped bring it into focus for me was working with an executive coach. I was very fortunate to have a great coach, and she walked me through an energy audit. And so effectively what this was, and you can do it without anybody, you know, you just basically take stock of your day, of what brought you joy, what made you happy, what kind of energized you, put a little spring in your step, and then what really drained you. And so it's not around time management or prioritization or anything like that. It's just an observing your mood doing different things. And so you take that back, and then over time you start to see trends emerge. And so for me, one thing that I saw was that I was always getting stressed out when I was working crazy long hours and I wasn't able to see my family. And I was really happy. I was always reporting happy and energetic when I was spending time with my family. So clearly family became a value or a priority for me in my life. In terms of the other values, you know, around transparency, like I said, yeah, I've received the feedback directly that I'm very transparent. So yeah, sometimes good, sometimes not so good. But recognizing for me that when I received that feedback, I was okay with that. And so I kind of let that sit with me. I'm like, yes, I am a transparent person. And this is a value that I'm going to continue to hold with me. So those are a couple of examples of how I landed with that list. And it changes over time too, right? So, you know, it will evolve. For the most part, I think there's some value to keeping this list of values and kind of assessing it and thinking about it over time.
For sure. And I really appreciate that energy audit, if you will, or being a bit mindful about, okay, so where am I feeling energized? Where are the areas that are really important to me? Things that I feel fully engaged in versus, okay, like when, or equally as valuable insight about, okay, when am I not feeling my best? To give us some level of direction in identifying that. And it's such a powerful navigational compass with so many things coming across our desks all the time. to remember, okay, so then how does this relate back to my values and how can I live that in this particular moment? So really appreciate this discussion. Tina has jumped in and said, want to piggyback on your observation about if we wanted to come back to oversharing. So Tina's interested to learn more about oversharing. So.
Oh my goodness. I'm not sure that I'm the right person because like I said, I really do overshare a little bit at work. So I guess the question for me, it's how do you balance being that genuine self with sharing everything and anything with anyone? And so I've learned what I'm capable of restraining in myself, for lack of a better word. So, you know, like, you know, being overly transparent, I'm acknowledging that there are certain things, obviously, that within the realm of my work, I simply just can't share. And that's, you know, there's secret information and there's other classified information and I can't share that. So, you know, I'm good with that. But then, you know, in terms of sharing personal stories or things about my family or my health with my team, I err more on the side of being open about it just because I want people to be able to talk about their mental health challenges. You know, I have anxiety. And so, you know, I've learned to manage that very well. And I see a lot of anxiety creeping up in the workplace. So I like to chat with folks about it and make sure that they feel comfortable, you know, maybe not comfortable telling me, but knowing that there is a supportive ear there for them should they need. You know, I do try to tell lighthearted stories about my family, just so that people, again, know that I'm a mom of a 2 young child and that I do take this a serious role for me and that I'm not all just career oriented. And yes, I'm the CEO, but I don't want to be working 20 hours a day and I do want to have some sort of life. And that also gives them permission, I guess, to do the same. And that's really what I want, is that healthy workplace, because that's what builds the resilience, right? That's what builds the trust. And if we're not all kind of healthy and working together and trusting each other, then we're not going to achieve the big things that we want to achieve.
No, appreciate that. And thank you. And again, lots of comments about so interesting and really appreciate it. And for me, a point that, and someone echoed it in the comments as well, appreciate how you phrased it as an and question. I think that's really powerful, right? How can I be who I am and recognize? And so rather than seeing it as an either or, where it can get tricky about, well, I'm just going to share everything or I'm not going to share anything, which are extreme ends, it's okay, so then how do these two things come together? And then that complexity of framing the question in that way really unlocks some powerful insights for us. So thank you. Love that. I've got another question from Brad. Lots of questions coming in. Who really appreciated in the 3H model, the humility. And so was wondering, there's also a lot of discussion around vulnerability. So do you see them as the same thing or how they relate to one another?
I mean, I would say that they're certainly related. There is a certain vulnerability, I can't say the word apparently, to being humble, that, you know, you have to accept, I know I make mistakes and I know I'm not going to get it right all the time or, you know, half the time. So I'm good with that. I'm comfortable with that. And I guess the vulnerability comes with sharing that and kind of being open to saying, yep, I've made a mistake. I'm sorry, everybody. Here's what we're going to do. Here's the next solution to kind of, you know, address this mistake. And I think, so maybe that's how those two are linked, by accepting your humility and then in the sharing, it's a vulnerable moment.
Thank you. Really great explanation. And it makes a lot of sense. And I'm with you as well, as that I really like how you talked about, well, there's vulnerability in humility, like saying, hey, I know some stuff and I tend not to know a lot of stuff. And just even acknowledging and accepting that is incredibly powerful. And well, another question. This is great. Erica was wondering, at the stage of their career, we're considering CEO positions. So was curious where this is a CEO role. Sounds like the first, you know, what was it? And any thoughts around how, what prompted you to make the leap to the corner office?
I wish I had a great answer. This was something I did think long and hard about, this one. So it was a big leap. And for me, it was not only a leap to a CEO role, but it was in a different sector. Sort of effectively, I've left the public service. I'm in a Crown Corporation, which is still in the federal body, but a separate entity. And I've never run a museum or been in the cultural space at all. So there was a lot of considerations in there, in addition to the move up in responsibility. What I did was I aligned it with my principles and my values. I went back to that, right, about the things, what are the things that I really care about? As Craig mentioned in my bio, I care deeply about science literacy and about dispelling science misinformation and disinformation and moving forward equity, diversity, inclusion, and accessibility. And these were all things I could do with this position in a new sector that I thought I could actually make a difference in. So it's anchored in that, what can I do to make a difference? Does it align with, you know, what I care about and where I think I can move things? Does it align with my skill set? So this is another piece too. You know, for me, that was a bit of a stretch. There's certainly a scientific administration part to this role. There's things like administering programs. I've done that before, but I've never managed galleries before. So that was a new stretch and I've been learning a lot and again, making lots of mistakes along the way. Happy to share those. But in the end, that was really the decision, is this the role that will advance, that I could have, not only advance my career, but be able to have the impact that I want to have in this world.
Well, and even more comments on this about how great those observations are. And this is a shining example, and thank you for sharing your experience, Danica, on this, around the value in so many ways, and in particular, in this example where we're making a really critical decision and how values, when we approach it from a place of values, doesn't necessarily make the decision easy. It makes it easier. And it's also such a powerful navigational force. Mm-hmm. And I just love that where you said, hey, okay, so now I have this opportunity. And now how does this relate to the core of who I am and what I value? And now that becomes so powerful because without it, then you're searching for, well, how do I make the quote unquote right decision or best decision? So I just think that's so fantastic in terms of your approach. So I've got another question, a personal question in this. It's great. I'm loving how people are chiming in. Resilience. You touched on resilience a little earlier, and it's just something that, again, in today's world, it's emphasized time and time again. So I'm curious, what are the things that you do personally to maintain your own individual level of resiliency? And then also you lead a team, you lead an organization. What are the ways that you embrace to keep your team and organization resilient?
Craig, that's a great question. I think my answers you won't be surprised by, but you know, on the personal level, focusing on living a healthy lifestyle, exercise, nutrition, stress management, sleep. I do struggle with insomnia though, but I do try to prioritize that. So, you know, without having those fundamentals there, you can't bring your best self to your job. So I really do prioritize that. As you know, I spend a lot of time in nature. I really do believe in the power, the healing power of green. And I literally get grounded. And I know this sounds a little corny, but sometimes, you know, if it's a nice day outside, I slip off my shoes and I stand on the grass and I just make that connection with nature. The one habit that I've started recently that really has boosted my resilience is what I call my delight. And it's after reading a book, the author's name is Ross Gay, and it's called The Book of Delights, and I highly recommend it. So he talks about, you know, listening or finding the delight in the everyday things, sort of like finding the awe in the everyday things. It's a simpler way of finding the awe. So, you know, the delight in a bird call or watching the sun come through the window. Doesn't have to be this big glorious moment, but just the small things that I notice in the moment that bring a smile to my face. And then I also do this fun reframing of tasks that I really don't want to do, but I find myself saying, oh, I have to do this right now. I change my mind and I say, oh, I have the opportunity to do this. And I find that sets me up for a very positive mindset. As you know, I anchor myself in my value and my purpose, and that keeps me focused on the important things that I need to do. So I don't get as distracted by the noise. It's always easy to get distracted, but I try to rein it in. And then for the team, I do regular check-ins with them. As I said before, I encourage them to focus on their family and their health, emphasize that work isn't the be-all and end-all to our lives. We have a lot of other things going on in our lives. I find that there's such a culture, generally speaking, of, you know, being present at work and being seen to be working and being uber productive. And, you know, I think that's exhausting for a lot of folks. So super conscious of workload and burden. And for me, I have a small team. They punch way above their weight. And there's this tendency to take on more and more and more. And that can burn folks out and leave them with a whole lot less energy. So regular chats about their health, about their workload, what their priorities are, offer them resource, offer them support to help them succeed. And then, you know, hope that leads to a more resilient organization.
Well, I think it's so great, and appreciate the focus on delights, because yeah, it's the small things that can drive so much positive impact, just little tweaks. And one thing that you mentioned, and it's one of the things that so many things I value about hosting the podcast, and one of them is the consistency of themes. And this is another one that I've found from the different guests that I've had, reframing. And we're faced with a situation and we can have one particular lens on it and we have the power to shift that. And I love how you've shared that example, because it's a great reminder to all of us is that how we view a particular task, situation, conversation, opportunity or challenge, or all these things have a profound effect on us. And I love that that's one of the elements that you shared. I have another question from Jacob, and said, I've noticed throughout the conversation, you've talked about inclusion and belonging and safety and so important pieces in healthy cultures. Like, how can leaders do this more effectively?
That's a very big question, Jacob. Thank you. I'm not sure that I'll have a full answer. I can share what I try to do in this space. So, you know, a sense of a safe workplace, psychologically, physically, and otherwise, as well as a sense of belonging, you want to make sure that, you know, you really do walk the talk. So when we talk about equity, diversity, and inclusion, you know, I want to make sure that we do have, that people see themselves in the leadership team, for example, that there's an approachability, that there's people that they can go talk to, that there's some sort of connection there. I've had folks I've worked with who've been the only member of a particular identity group. That's been extremely isolating. Finding ways to support, diversify the workforce, bring in other folks that really bring this, you know, rich perspective and rich experience and just a wonderful diversity to everybody makes a big difference, because that's how you grow the organization, right? And again, ton of data to show that different perspectives and different experiences brought to bear on a problem or a policy or initiative really does make a hugely more impactful difference in the end product. I try to ensure that there's a sense of compassion and the empathy that goes a long way in the belonging space too. And I listen. So, you know, if there are people that are saying, you know what, I think there's an issue here, or I think that, you know, we're seeing some sort of bias, or I've never seen a case in the museum of discrimination, but, you know, should that come forward, take action, show you're serious, try to identify the root cause of these things and then fix them, because you can't let that permeate and persist once you know that they exist.
Well, and again, lots of great comments coming through, and thank you. And 2 points that you just shared that I think are so important, the importance of taking action. I just think so often, or in many cases, it happens and then there's just this vacuum of action. It's just this space. And then what can happen is either explicitly or implicitly that this is okay and everyone's looking around. So the importance of taking action and intervening and ensuring that people know, like, this is not right. And I love that you highlight and started with, because I think this is so important as well. And there's lots of data to back this up. It's being that role model. People look up for how to behave. I remember a study that I read, which is so impactful, where they said one of the primary reasons where there's dysfunctional or toxic behavior in an organization, you talk to leaders down the line and they go, hey, I look up and then Craig is acting this way. And so then I assume that's okay. And that's such a, once again, a foundational, a grounded approach about, well, it starts with me. If I want to build a safe, inclusive environment where people feel a strong sense of belonging, then I have to model that in every single interaction that I can, and take accountability for that. So a couple of more questions, and I was going to ask this, so it's fun that it came across anyhow, that Stan was wondering, you know, just starting early in their leadership career, so any advice in terms of things to do or things to avoid?
Oh my goodness. Well, I think that I serve as the cautionary tale of what not to do sometimes. So take this with that in mind. So you've heard me talk about continuous learning. Never stop learning. Be curious and invest in your own development. I think relationships are incredibly important in the workplace. So building strong relationships, and know how to work with others, because ultimately it's all about the people, right? That's your role as a leader. That's how you do the work. You're not working in isolation. You really need to learn how to work well with others. I would say know that change is constant, but nothing lasts forever. And that means the good stuff and the bad stuff. So being able to adapt and be flexible in the face of change, I think that's so important. And I expect it's going to continue to be so more and more. You know, I was thinking if I were to go back and offer some advice to my younger self, I'd say a lot of things, although I'll try to be short. Stop trying to please people, all the people all the time. Don't sweat the smaller stuff. And you don't have to say yes to all the things. And those kind of all roll up into you can't do everything, even if you want to. So you've got to be strategic about what you want to achieve. And, you know, I think too often in my career, I've been pulled into 1,000 different directions trying to help out. You know, I have that service mindset, right? So I want to help out all the people that I can. And I wanted to do it at 100% effort all the time, the best quality work all the time. And that is just not sustainable. And it led to me being overworked, super stressed, and not the best version of myself. So sometimes you just need to say no, or at least not right now. And you need to make some hard decisions that people won't be happy with. So use your values, your principles, your priorities, and let them guide your work and your decisions.
So interesting you should say that. I love that, because there's a constant wave of requests or things that we can do, and we can't do everything. We have limits, and then recognizing, okay, where am I going to invest my time and energy? And almost like it was a reframing exercise versus like, no, no, and hesitant to say no. I remember someone saying, you know, well, when you say no, what does this allow me to say yes to, right? Like, and it's such a real mental flip, because to recognize we can get torn in all kinds of different directions. And then, so, you know, what impact is that going to have? And we want to be mindful of that. We're almost out of time. So this hour has flown by. So thank you. This has been so much fun. I've got another question from Tim, who asks, what's a topic that you wish was talked about more often in leadership circles? Like, where would you like to shine more of a light?
This isn't going to come as a surprise, but health. So I still don't see it in a lot of executive circles, and I've done a lot of executive training over the years, and I haven't seen it built into any curriculum or any coaching or anything where they say, yeah, well, I guess they say self-care and they say take care of yourself, but they don't tell you how to do that. And they don't tell you how to prioritize that and how important it actually is, and how much more productive and effective as a leader you will be if you do these things. And I'm not talking about spending hours a day in a gym or doing anything like that, but little bits, you know, in the week that you take care of yourself will go such a long way to improving your abilities as a leader. Craig, I'm sure you're much more up to date on the literature than I am, but I just haven't seen that in my training over the years.
Thank you, and got comments on that as well. And I agree that no, it's becoming more a part of the conversation. And yet, to your point, like operationalizing that, for lack of a better word, is kind of, it's a bit of a mystery. Like, okay, self-care or my health is important. And then what does that look like? How do I go about doing that? And I agree. I think this is really critical, because if we don't have the foundation from the physical health and the psychological health, emotional health, then it's really challenging. And we have to prioritize that, just as you were saying earlier about, well, we don't have time for everything. We've got to make that a part of our day-to-day. So great question. We're almost at time. So this has been awesome. So thank you so, so much. I'm not surprised that we had such a fun and engaging conversation. And we do have a couple of minutes potentially left. And so I'd love to check back in. I love to check in with people and say, is there anything that we haven't, that we had so many audience questions and I ask you a lot of questions. I always love to throw back and, you know, anything that we haven't touched on that you'd like to expand on or talk a little bit more before we close our conversation today.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, Craig. You know, I think we've covered a lot of ground. For me, I think it's really trying to emphasize to folks to be the best version of themselves and be the best leader that they can be is really knowing who you are and what you're grounded to. So, you know, like looking to your past to inform the future, I think there's an expression around that. I think that's so important. And you know, constantly, you will constantly evolve and you need to roll with the changes as they come along, but knowing who you are in that helps you pivot and make those changes and maintain that flexibility.
Well, and thank you. So this has just been absolutely fantastic. And we got so many comments here about how much people have enjoyed the conversation and your insights. And I think it's just such an important piece. Once again, those threads that have come through about being aware of who you are, being aware of what's important to you, and then using that insight. And what I think is really interesting almost reminds me of the last question we talked about, health. Well, we've got to use that information, right? We've got to find a way to put that into practice. And again, I know we're both passionate about science and data-informed decisions. So thank you so much, Danica. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for sharing your experience, your insight, and to everybody who joined us today. Really appreciate your time and level of engagement. This has just been so rewarding and meaningful for me. And until next time, stay tuned. Look forward to seeing you as part of our next conversation. Bye for now, everybody.
Thank you so much for joining me here today on Do Good to Lead Well. If you enjoyed today's podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. If you'd like to continue the conversation, you can follow me on Twitter at Craig Dowden or reach out via LinkedIn or email info@craigdowden.com. I look forward to meeting you here next week for another transformational episode.